I tell people that, you know, the word guarantee means something to me. I can't believe that people don't make people guarantee things.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Okay, so take us back to right before you lost everything.
Okay.
Tell me about what the year before you lost everything was looking like.
It was really 2 years before.
Okay.
And the first warning that I got that I was going to lose everything, because everything for me was ego-based. For the first time in my life, when I built my home in Rancho Santa Fe, I wasn't happy. Every other time, even broke in Akron, Ohio, I was a super happy kid. I wanted to be rich only to buy my mom a house and a car, because the only time there was any unhappiness in my life, it was my mom was crying because the car broke down and she didn't have enough money. But I was a super happy kid. I call myself a toptimist. That's how happy I was. But when I built that home in Rancho Santa Fe, I woke up in the morning for the first time, looked at the ceiling. I didn't have a job. I didn't need anything. I had a Ferrari, a Porsche, a beautiful wife, three gorgeous daughters, and I wasn't happy. And weird thing was, my 30th birthday, I get this birthday present. Now, my father left at 5. He was my hero. At 10 years old, he was still my hero. You know, very wealthy back then in
the
70s.
Did you have communication with him after he left?
Yeah, okay. I did. Not great, because he was off with his super young wife, spending money, not paying my mom child support, which must have been really difficult for my mom to always talk about how super cool my dad was. And meanwhile, she's struggling to because he's not giving her anything.
Because she's looking at him like, hey, asshole.
Right. And always hiding that from me until my 10th birthday, when he forgot my birthday. And to me, it was devastating. And when I called him, now that I'm old, I know what he was doing. But he told me something that was horrible. He said to me, I didn't forget your birthday. I just don't believe in birthdays, at 10 years old. And I was crushed. And what my mom did, because she knew how crushed I was, instead of protecting him, which she normally did, she always tried to keep the heroic static. It must have been like the pain on my face or whatever she laid into my dad. And I realized my dad was now not my hero. And I ended up hating my dad through my teenage years. And then as I started being successful, my aunt told me to try to understand my dad. And so what I did, my 30th birthday came, I got a birthday present from my dad. Super excited.
Were you successful at this time?
Very.
Did you ever get anything where he was like coming back around, like, hey, this guy actually turned out all right, he's doing well, was your father successful?
My dad was successful.
Okay.
True entrepreneur, very successful, but, you know, because we left, you know, it was just a very weird thing. He was shameful, right, about what, because he cheated on my mom, he wasn't nice, but he's a good guy, and I became really close with him when I got older. So I get this birthday present, and it's a big box, and it's a gorgeous blazer that fit perfectly, which meant more, because I could afford anything at 30 that I wanted. It meant more that it fit perfectly, because he called my wife and asked for, you know, my custom sizes. And I open it up. I'm so excited. I'm like, my dad's finally apologizing. Like, he finally gets life. And I open it up, and all the lining, pockets, everything is torn out. And my wife told me, like, I've never seen you look like that. I was devastated. And I called him. I'm like, you know, why are you punishing me again? I go, I thought we were developing a relationship. And he said, because I'm worried about you. This was the first warning. So what do you mean you're worried about me? I got a Porsche. I got a Ferrari. I live in Rancho Santa Fe. He goes, no. He goes, you're just like me. And he goes, I don't want you to wear that jacket. I was like, what are you doing? Punishing me? He goes, no. I want you to hang it in the closet. And every day look at it to remind you, you're just like me. I'm like, okay, I'm an asshole? Like, literally, that's what I'm thinking. He goes, no. He goes, I don't want you to be the richest man in the cemetery. He goes, you're not taking anything with you. That's why I ripped the pockets out. My relationship with my dad that day changed forever. Like, I got a touch of understanding, because years later, when I lost everything, I realized that everything I hated about my father was what I hated about myself. And the first warning was that. Now, 2 years before I went bankrupt, my wife, I came home, I was at the Emmy Awards with Little John. I was already working for Lee Steinberg. I, you know, went back to work, still surrounding myself with the wrong people, doing absolutely the wrong things.
When you say the wrong people, what do you mean?
People that didn't work, that did drugs, alcohol, went to strip clubs in the middle of the day. You know, things I don't, you know, necessarily love my daughters seeing all the time, but it was the truth. I was surrounding myself with morons, and it was because I was bored. instead of trying to help people. I was always this, you know, just person that I wasn't interested in. I was trying to help my family always. I had purpose and passion, and I had no purpose or passion. And here I am running.
Doesn't Tony Robbins say that this is the science of achievement, but not the art of fulfillment?
You nailed it. Yeah. And I wasn't fulfilled. And my wife, I came home at 5:30 in the morning after lying to her, and she told me she wasn't happy. And like I told you, I outkicked my coverage when it comes to my wife. I met her in the fourth grade. It took me until I was 26 years old to even have a conversation of anything with her and convince her to marry me by the time I'm 29. Here I was with everything. And when I woke up in the morning, you know, not remembering everything, it clicked in my head like, you know what? I'm in trouble. And we hadn't lost everything yet. It was 2 years before. And my wife, literally, I went downstairs. And for the first time in my head, I'm like, what is she unhappy about? We have a live-in nanny. We live here. Anything we want, we can go anywhere, buy anything, do any. What is she talking about?
There was no connection.
No, and she clicked it out right away and said, you better go back and take stock in who you were and what you want to become, or I'm not going to be here. And something clicked in my head. Unlike most addicts or people who have problems, it just clicked in my head. And I spent one whole day outlining what then became my book, Connected to Goodness, about how to live your life with gratitude, empathy, which is forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication, which has a duality. And I wrote this outline, and I kept it in my pocket. You know, I asked for forgiveness for myself. The hardest part for me was 2 years later. 2 years later, I'm living my life the right way. I'm CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment, Jerry Maguire. You know, unbelievable. My office is sitting.
I'm not a sports fan. Yeah, so what Jerry Maguire.
So it's the most notable sports agency in the world. We represented everyone from Warren Moon, Steve Young, Oscar De La Hoya, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, the who's who, $2 billion
in
management.
Biggest sports stars.
They made a movie about our firm called Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise. It was one of the most famous.
You know Jerry Maguire,
movies.
Lauren?
Of course I know Jerry Maguire.
Show me the fucking money, Lauren.
Show me the money. You had me at hello. Well, I'm sitting there in my office, which sits overlooking Catalina Island on Newport, you know, Newport Center Drive, right? Fashion Island, with Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback on one side of me, and Lee Steinberg, the legend, on the other. And I wake up in the morning, realize that the causes that I created 2 years earlier and many years before that had caught up with me, that I had let my arrogance, my ego get in my own way, and that I was claiming bankruptcy. Now, best day of my life.
What do you mean you realized? Like, how do you just realize that one day? Do you look at your finances over?
No, I realized one by claiming. I knew I was going to go bankrupt about 9 months before. Because I was liquidating everything to help pay. Because I wanted to go bankrupt to restart. I could have done different things, but this is how I lost over $100 million. And this is how. I owned a golf course in a ski mountain in many properties. I had tons of equity. I got into a lawsuit that I ended up losing, but then winning the malpractice suit against my lawyers. But I spent millions of dollars in cash to win because I had the need to be right. Period. I had a law degree, right? I passed the bar, but I had a need to be right. So did my wife, by the way.
Weren't willing to settle.
I was not willing to walk away. I had to prove myself right. Well, meanwhile, I made one mistake because I had no mentors. I thought that because I had millions of dollars of equity, that I could just go to the bank and borrow against my golf course.
Leverage is a hell of a thing.
Well, what happened was in 2006 and 2007, all of a sudden, I was so leveraged that when I went to the bank and said, hey, you know, I need $5 million, you know, which I had, they said, nah. I'm like, what do you mean? I got $60 million in equity in the golf course. They said, yeah, but we're not comfortable lending it to you. I didn't realize with all the education I had, all the experience, that the bank would not, like that situation, the banks were going under. They weren't going to take the risk on me because I had so much.
Can they just decide not to give you the money from
yeah,
you?
Yeah, because
it's
collateral.
Like someone just decides.
Yeah, and listen, then what happens is you start applying more places to try to get it, and your credit, right, because they're reporting all the times the inquiries, now it's even harder to get money. And meanwhile, my bills aren't stopping as I'm trying to figure out, right, I have a lot of bills. Some things are profitable. The golf course was not profitable, but I had huge equity in it. I had bills. So what I decided to do was to bankrupt it, and literally I didn't owe anybody anything because the equity was there, but I couldn't get
it
out.
Was it a Chapter 7 or 11?
Chapter 7.
Okay.
So, yeah. But Like, literally, I had to give
for
my...
For those of... What's the difference? Seven and...
One's a restructuring, and one's a straight bankruptcy. It clears all debt.
Which is...
Seven is the one I did, which clears all debt. And you create a bankruptcy, a trust, and then they pay all the debtors. So what happened was I had enough equity that they were now forced to sell the properties, and everybody did okay. Right? It wasn't like I had this huge loss for everyone. I'm the big loser. Yeah. But I was the big winner for one reason. When I said it came to me that morning when I had to claim bankruptcy, two things came to me. One, that I had to go up to the most famous sports agency in the world, which I had my dream job. In fact, kids will tell me today, I dream about being you, right? This sports agent, so many kids want to do it. I had to go up there and tell the guys that hired me, because I was Midas, everything I touched, I made money with, that I had lost everything. Because I wasn't really telling them everything going on, because I thought I could pull myself out. So literally out of nowhere, I had to tell them, hey, I'm just so you know, I'm claiming bankruptcy, and I can understand if I'm not the guy you thought I would to run your company. Fortunately for me, Lee was super gracious, because he had gone bankrupt when he was in his 20s, and he understood where I was taking the company and what my skill set was. But the hardest thing I've ever done is that before I went to work, I had to drive over to my mom's house. Only reason I ever wanted to be rich from 5 years old on, and that's all I wanted to be, was to buy my mom a house and a car. And I had to go over to her house and tell her I've gone bankrupt, and that you're going to have to move because I lost your house.
You know what, though? I think conversations like this coming from people like you who've done so much since then are so important, because everybody wants to celebrate and talk about the success as an entrepreneur, and nobody wants to talk about the hard times. And I feel like you cannot truly be an entrepreneur without getting your face bloodied a few times, right? Yeah. Like, maybe you don't go completely bankrupt, but it's going to happen. You're going to get bloodied. And people have this idea that, you know, it's all bells and whistles and it's all fun and games and there's not struggle. Like, there's... Working for yourself and building your own business is the hardest thing you can do, in my opinion, when it comes to, you know, a professional career. Like, it's, you know, having a job is one thing. I respect everybody that does that. But when you're out on your own and the buck stops with you, it's difficult. And, like, I think that entrepreneurs that are run, and this is where I have a difficult time with a lot of, like, speaking coaches and people that run around and only talk about the good side.
They only teach, right?
Like, it's important to talk about the struggles, because it gives validity to what you're doing. And if you can do something like that and come back from it, then I don't want to say anybody can, but it's possible
Anybody can. Like, I believe that, you know, with this consistent nature, like you have, Lauren, you know, consistency to me is the nemesis of human nature. And, you know, I'll get into gratitude a little bit. Gary Vee didn't steal it from me. Thank you, Heather Thalladay. But no, honestly, I'm amazed, even within myself. Like, I know certain things are so good for me. I'm a smart, disciplined guy, but yet my human nature doesn't allow for consistency. I can teach people to say thank you before they go to bed and when they wake up. I've studied physics, quantum physics, metaphysics. I know it'll change your life. 30 straight days, 1 second a day. That's all you got to give me. I promise it'll change your life. But when I speak in the morning, by night, half the people won't say thank you. By the next morning, another half, and within 3 days, most people will forget to say thank you. When I want to be healthy, I'm amazed how... sometimes I just can't get to the gym. Everybody knows working out, especially at 50, is important. Stretching, right? And it's taken me years to meditate every morning for 20 minutes. I know that's, to me, the key to my life. I meditate every morning, but I can't tell you that it's not a struggle still for me. Why is it so hard to be consistent?
What app do you use? Because I like a detail. Do you use Headspace? Like
Headspace. Okay. Well, I do Theta meditation now, but I work with Headspace. I'm a huge fan of Headspace because most people don't really understand what meditation is. It's praying, right? And it's just being in a place, a center. I think the key to life is how quickly you can get back to center, not how you react to things.
So you use Headspace for 20 minutes every morning, and you also do another practice of meditation?
No, I personally don't use Headspace anymore, but I would if you're a beginner.
That's a good way to learn.
For sure. It's a great app.
What is TB?
I use Theta meditation.
Theta.
It's a vibrational. So my philosophy in life is that you can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to and less than you. So Theta meditation allows you to vibrate faster. And it's what the old shamans use. They go up for 20 years in the mountains to elevate their own vibration. Now, through this technique, you can in 20 minutes reach what's called the seventh plane of vibration. You actually can physically, in a, you know, be able to see the vibrations in your brain waves. There's alpha, gamma is supposed to be God meditation. So alpha, beta, theta. Theta is a great meditative state. It allows everything to, it allows me to proclaim what I want, proactively allow things to happen in my life, putting me in a sense of peace, in the flow. I'm very energetic, very vibrational, very spiritual, but I have this other side like you, Michael. I'm extreme entrepreneur,
yeah.
Which is where that book, Think and Grow Rich, to me, was the catalyst for how I wrote my book. It was like there's a duality to the world.
I just have a question that I feel like no one asks people. What happens if you don't meditate? Everyone asks what happens if you do meditate. What happens if you don't meditate?
I believe that if you don't meditate, that you create a wall of resistance.
So, okay, let's say it's a random Monday. You wake up, you're rushed, you don't get meditation, and you've been meditating 6 days last week. How is it different than a day that you do?
Oh, without a doubt, it has a zeroing effect. If I don't know my baseline, where center is, if I am not in the flow, then I'm actually going to start putting faith and into the wrong things. I'm starting to attract the wrong things. I'll have the wrong energy. That goes to what I call an unconscious competency. It changes my whole day. It changes my whole day because it's like, here's the example. If you meditate, it's like a car on the top of a hill in San Francisco. If you meditate, all it takes is one finger to hold the car there all day because you know where that's at. If you don't meditate, you wake up and the car's already rolling down the hill and you just keep letting it roll. And by the time the day's over, you're run over. When you meditate, you can get back to center. You know where it's at. Michael?
Yeah, I gotta get back to center.
Stoicism, meditation's getting back to it.
I want to ask you, so you coach and you mentor younger people now.
And older people.
And so when you see, since you've been through some things, been through some shit.
Yeah.
When you see, say a young person's doing well, starting to make a little bit of money, what are some red flags you say, like, oh, that's not, like, maybe something you recognize that you've done yourself or something that they're doing that you say, hey, like, red flag, we got to fix that.
Need to be right. Need to be offended. Need to be separate, inferior, superior. Guilt. They'll feel very guilty.
I feel like a lot of people need to be offended these days.
Yeah. There's a need to be guilty, which is a really key one that I find in people that are very successful. Because most people, in order to have the drive to be economically successful, they come from nothing. Or they're pushed really hard. And so what happens is they have a worthiness issue. And when they receive, they're not in receivership, but they've received a lot, and their vessel's overflowing and full. That's what happened to me. I had too much, and I didn't feel worthy of it. My mom made $17,000 a year. I made $10 million in 1 year. And she worked way, she's smarter than me. She's nicer than me, right? And I've had all these worth. What I did is I changed my life by shifting the paradigm of value and putting myself into receivership. It's receivership's important because it's appreciation. I'm grateful for everything I've attracted or allowed to happen, but then it's my responsibility to add value, appreciate, like a house. I appreciate what I'm thankful for by what? Adding value and giving it away. And if I see young entrepreneurs or old entrepreneurs like a vessel just filling up that everything's happening for me, they're a positive attitude. No, everything should be happening through you. Like, I live my whole life. Everything happens for me. I'm Midas. You know, everything's for me, for me, for me. No, everything now is through me for everyone else. That's the whole distinction. That's the true success in life. And what happens is if you allow things to come through you, your vessel is always empty. So you're expanding. You actually can receive more. And that's how the shift of paradigm for me. I make more money. I'm way more fulfilled, passionate. My relationships with all the people in my life are so much substantial. Like, they're just substantial relationships. And then I fire the people literally that are bleeding me. Like, one piece of advice I would give anyone that's young.
Do you think you can get to that space, though, without having basically your face slammed in? Because I know I've been in those situations where you're doing really well. Money's flowing in. You're just crushing. You think you're on top of the world. You think you're right about everything. You think you know more. I've been there. And the only way that I figured out that I didn't know, and then there's a lot of things that I can learn.
When your wife kicked your ass.
Yeah.
No, but it's also when,
or lost everything, or lost close to everything. Yeah. 99.9% of the people on earth have to be forced. It's like being a parent, and you guys will be great parents. But one thing I've learned about being a parent, nobody listens to me, but they watch me. And that's why I stopped telling people. I used to tell kids all the time, don't buy that Ferrari. Let me tell you, the only thing about buying a Ferrari, if you drive it too much, it breaks down. If you drive it too little, it breaks down. If something breaks down, it's really expensive. All your friends are going to think you're an asshole. And worse, every girl's going to know your true anatomy. So don't buy a Ferrari, right?
That's actually really good advice.
But.
So you're not going to buy a Ferrari, right?
Here's what I tell people now.
Luckily, those cars aren't what interests me so
much.
Yeah,
good. But if they do, here's what I tell people now. Buy a Ferrari and learn from it.
Yeah.
Buy it and learn from it. But don't hold on to it. If it doesn't make you happy, let it go. Here's my warning to you. This is what my experience was. If that doesn't resonate with you, buy the goddamn thing. Go enjoy it. Right? You might be one of these people that it's good for you. But I think in life, my job is to attract what I want, learn from it. And then if it keeps me happy, hold on to it. Like my wife. Like I just know my relationship with my wife, that's something I want to hold on to forever. Like I will fight. Like I just know it's never, that thing's never going to roll down the hill where I get to a point with my wife where when I was young, I didn't understand that, where I could have ruined my relationship. Now it's so, the litmus test is so high with my relationship because I never want to, she makes me so happy. She makes me, right? And other things in my life, I'm like, I drive a Volt. You know, I'm around pretty famous, successful people, and they laugh. They'll ask the guys that are filming, they're like, is that Dave's car? Like, well, yeah.
What's a Volt?
It's a Chevy Volt. It's an electric car. It's, you know, it's a nice car.
Well, it's not a Ferrari.
Probably the most practical car you can own.
I don't get why people care so much.
They do.
I think that we're shifting a little bit. There is some people that do, but I think
it's shifting.
It's shifting a little bit.
I hope so.
I think millennials are going to shake it up.
I hope so.
I don't think it's
Prius
about
and minivans are
the
my
handbag
favorite.
You have or the car you drive anymore. I think it's about more experiences, and getting off your phone and actually enjoying the experiences and documenting them as well at the same time. And I just don't think that the trains, the planes, the automobiles are that like. Back then it was like such to stand in front of a private jet 10 years ago was like so cool. Now it's like what else do you have?
I hope you're right, because I still think there's people that sell at the back of the room, that oversell, back end sell, manipulate people, that sit on a Rolls Royce with, you know, a fake house behind them. You know, I see those people on the internet, and in my mind I'm thinking, who actually buys into that? And I'm so glad you said that, Lauren, because I see that in my kids, right? They're not really interested in like seeing that.
No, you have to have something to say. You have to be interesting. Like you have to provide value, in my opinion. I mean, I'm more interested in that than anything.
I don't like the coaches that do that, or they label themselves coaches that do that type of stuff, because I feel like they're selling to the desperate. And that's gonna be a controversial statement, but it's people that are just looking for a quick, easy fix. I need that Ferrari. I need that car. I want that big thing. And you have people preying on people like that, that maybe, you know, maybe you shouldn't be signing up for that course that may be bullshit, or maybe you shouldn't be following this person with a lifestyle that's not realistic. Like for me, like look to the people your age, look to the people that have done it the right way, that have looked with very long-term vision and built actual brand. Like if
or
you can,
haven't done it the right way, and out of not doing it the right way, have learned the right way.
Right.
Young people, listen, I'm all about bettering yourself, taking courses, going and seeing people speak, but don't believe the hype into those bullshit lifestyles that 99.99% of the world will never have and shouldn't have by doing those, you know, those practices, right? Like
it's a
go and build something real.
Right. It's a scarce energy, right? And that's what I try to teach people. In fact, I tell people that, you know, the word guarantee means something to me. I can't believe that people don't make people guarantee things. Even with my coaching, right? Because I'm amazed. I tell people all the time, you want me to coach you, this is what I have to do. I'm going to work for free for you for a month, because I want to learn. I want to learn if I can help you, how I can help you. And then after a month, every month I can determine how I can help you and how much it is by how much I can make you. Or how and how much you need from me. So I don't believe in, hey, pay me 60 grand in a year and I'll make you 600. I know I can do that with most people, but it doesn't make sense to me. I'd rather someone at the end of the month, I say, you know what? This is what I did for you this month. I think you made 100 grand. How's 10 grand? Does that sound fair? Yeah, that's cool. It's so much easier at the end of the month to tell somebody, hey, this is the performance. What piece, you know, how did I help and what's it worth to you? And if someone says, hey, I need all 100 grand, you know, it would be okay, David. Yeah, cool. Okay. Want me to coach you next month? But in the end, I end up making so much more money and everybody's so happy. It's a weird thing to do, but I really take a lot of time to assess people and give them a free coaching so I can tell them, you know what, I'm not really for you, but I know a guy, Michael, that does podcasts. And he would be a great podcast coach for you, or whatever it is.
Well, that's what life is, right? It's connecting the, you know, because I have some expertise in some areas, but I have a lot of areas where I'm not expert at all and don't know. And I need, you know, you need that help. And I think anybody that labels themselves like they're an expert of all things, that's when you got to be wary. I wanted to ask you, we were talking a little bit this on your show about patience and building long-term brands and long-term vision. Have you always thought that way, or how? What was the shift that made you start thinking that way?
Right, it's so weird because I was wise beyond my years when I was young, so I literally saved everything. I had such a long-term goal. What happened? What really hurt me was great success. So by the time I was 26, my company sold that I was working for $3.4 billion in 1995.
That's it.
So yeah, so I got, and that's a billion was a lot. I ended up with a big chunk of change. I started investing into technology and real estate. 93 was when I started investing into real estate, which was a low, right? Bottom of the market recession in Southern California. So all of a sudden I always was a long-term thinker. I had I'm going to hold Qualcomm for life. Right? These are the things I would say. I'm going to buy one property a year and then have 15-year mortgages. And on year 16, I'll refinance it for tax-free income. Mm-hmm. I always long. By the time I hit 30, I was a multimillionaire, and I just literally lost that short term, that long term was I'll just continually make 10, 20, 30 million.
So you just
thought
that it was just going to keep coming.
Yeah, because I never lost. And that's where 99.9% of people have to experience something themselves. It's the truly wise, in my opinion, that can read about it or be told about it and make a significant change in their life. That to me is the wisdom that now I do have, which is why I always have at least three mentors, all ages, by the way, which I think is why, Lauren, you, my wife and I, who she's not here. I think it's so awesome because we all have complementary but totally different expertise and situation knowledge, where I just have met you guys and feel like, you know what, I could stay here till midnight and the conversation would just, and if my wife was here too, we would laugh, we'd cry, but we all would learn. And as a whole, we would kill it.
Well, Dave, I got some bad news for you because the power's out in the building. So you may be here till midnight because
you're not
going to get
down
those stairs. So there's a lot of young people that listen to this show and all walks of life. A lot of people starting blogs, some YouTube channels, some starting new businesses. What would you tell somebody that says, I've been doing this for a year and I haven't got the results that I want. It's been a whole year. What do I do?
Stay in business. My key to business always is stay in business.
That's unfucking believable advice. It's so simple, but it's so true. Everyone quits.
Yeah.
You can't quit.
Just do it. And that's what I loved about you, Lauren, in my podcast, is you're like, well, get the extra. And that's what Gary talks about, too. Are you kidding? Quit making excuses. Go wait tables. Go bartend. Do if you want the money. But for me, even today, the first thing after meditation, and when I'm analyzing my business in my head for today, can I guarantee I'm in business tomorrow? I go down every business I own, everything. I'm like, am I guaranteed I'm in business tomorrow? Because number one, I know that I can evolve. And two, it sets the tone for the day that I'm not going to make any decisions that go against the main point, which is stay in business tomorrow. And then if I'm lucky enough to get incremental or exponential growth, so be it. But I've seen the advantage of being a little older. I've seen people like you started something in 2011 and it grows like a hockey stick. And it comes out of nowhere. And some companies grow in 8 months and some 80 years. But all of the companies have something in common. They stayed in business.
And I think if you want something bad enough, you will figure it out. If you want to, if you have a vision and you can't sleep at night because you have this vision, you will figure out a way. And if that means waiting tables until 2 a.m, you'll do it. I think that if you think you want something, maybe you don't want it bad enough if you're not willing to figure out a way, a different angle.
Well, we have young siblings. I think it's interesting. There's your generation, there's ours, and then I think Lauren and I are a little bit in the middle, right? The generation below us, it's funny. I worry about them sometimes. I never want to put a whole generation down, but I feel like there's a softness occurring there that
I'm sure every generation I
have that fear for my because I have a generational kids, right? 19 to 8,
but I feel like every generation above the generation thinks the generation is soft. I'm sorry, but I think that's how
I agree.
Generation...
I don't
like colleges. They're always the next generations. It's so much harder to get into San Diego State
My grandma's like, oh, your dad is and back in my day we were like every generation.
I'm aging myself, but I think that there's there's people talk about it all the time, like 8th place trophies and participation awards and all this. It's like you have to put in the work. I have a young sister and she'll get mad at me, but it's like you want to figure out what you want to do, then go do it. Like I told her, you go go taste a bunch of different things. Go work here. Go work there. Go get a job here. Go do a bunch of shit. You're going to find out that you don't like 90% of it, but at least you're putting in the work and figuring out what you do. Like, people are like, they think they're just going to stumble onto this great idea. There's grand vision and they're sitting back waiting for it to come along. They're not out there making, they're waiting for the world to come to them. They're not going to the world.
And I'll tell you, there's some people, because there's a genetic unconscious competency, there's some people that are just still born driven. You know, I'm blessed to travel the world and just see, like, from Kenya to Portugal down to New York City, that I see some 8-year-olds that are just born with the same thing that we're born with. And I just wonder the medium, like how many are entitled, which has nothing to do with how much money you have, but, you know, that are more in the phase, like you're saying, that aren't willing. Sometimes I thought about doing a camp for kids. Like the Joe DeSena from Spartan Races, he talks about pain thresholds. Mm-hmm. I'd love to do like this empowerment camp where by watching, not by telling, but by watching, like watching Kobe Bryant today when we were doing the thing for Tencent, I'm watching him going, he has the spirit of excellence. Let me give you an example.
Relentless.
And his kids picked up on it. So one of the things he says, he took a year off from true exercise when he quit playing basketball just to get out of that. And now 4 a.m. he's back in the gym every morning, 4 a.m. And then he said, well, my daughters, they come with me as well, because they want to be great basketball players. One's volleyball and one's basketball. They're in there at 4 a.m. Then he says, well, my 9-year-old also, she's in her third year of Mandarin because she wants to come to China with me and be an interpreter. There's an energy that they've watched their dad, right? Because he hasn't had the time to tell them everything that he wants to do. And I don't have the time, but I see my 19-year-old, my 17-year-old, my 14-year-old. Doesn't matter what I say, they're watching me. They know I wake up at 4 a.m. They have a spirit of excellence that is carried. And I think that's what I like to teach is, hey, let's have a spirit of an empowerment camp. Let's bring in a whole bunch of people with a spirit of excellence and just find out what they do. And
4 a.m.?
Yeah, every day.
How do you do it? Even when you're hungover?
Yeah. Well, if I go to bed at 4, no. Even if I'm hungover, the thing is I'm hungover a lot less than I was when I was younger. Because I started, first of all, I've had a lot of fun and appreciated it. Even through the dumb stuff I did, I'm one of the few old guys who have lost everything, made tons of mistakes, drives my wife crazy. But I will tell you, I don't regret it. I mean, it was an incredible. Imagine being like young, fairly good looking, totally rich, and just blowing it out. You know,
I mean,
and I know it's easy to say now because I didn't lose my wife. I think I would look differently if I lost my wife
or your family.
It.
Yeah.
But looking back, I do not regret what I did, because I didn't really hurt anyone but myself.
Well, I think it's a healthy way to look at entrepreneurship. Anyway, right? Like, you have your ups, you have your downs. Like, if you're so fixated on the monetary aspect of it and just saying, like, I have to have this to be happy, that's when you get in trouble. But people, if you can look at it and say, okay, you know what, I was doing really well, lost a bunch and I came back, like, that's the healthy way to look at it. That's how you can enjoy life. The people that get so fixated, like you said earlier, I've known a lot of old rich dudes that have died miserable with, you know, maybe they have all the money in the world, but they end up having nothing in the end.
Because they attach their happiness to an outcome. And this is hard for people. It's counterintuitive. I always say, detach yourself from the outcome, detach your happiness from an outcome. I'm one of the most driven people you'll meet. Still, I wake up before. I'm a student in my calendar. I believe in productivity and accessibility. Time is a huge thing for me. But I've detached all my happiness from the outcomes. I enjoy. My happiness is derived from the consistent, everyday, persistent without quit.
The process.
Pursuit.
I
pursuit
could
of
not
my potential.
Agree with you more on this. I think that we should kind of explore this. It's like, what's the fun to getting to the outcome as quick as you can possibly get there? For me, it's the building, it's the creating, it's the
pursuit.
Meeting different people, it's the journey.
And there's that theory of experience stretching we've talked about on the show, where it's like, you know, maybe you're sitting, and I've talked about this before, and you've probably heard it, where you're sitting on, like, maybe you're looking, enjoying one of the best sunsets in the world, and you say, wow, this life could never get better. And then later you see that sunset, and you have, like, a cocktail in your hand, like, wow, it can't get better. Next thing you're like, you see that same sunset on a boat, and you're like, this never get better. And all of a sudden, the original sunset that you saw actually makes you unhappy.
Right.
And that's where people get in trouble in life. It's like, I need to get that car or that watch. And they set these basic, like, milestones. And every time you get to a milestone, it's not good enough. You got to keep going. And then the one that you really look towards in the beginning that you thought would make you the most happy actually becomes a source of depression.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think people just look at activities the wrong way. Time is essential to me. So there's two types of time. One, linear time. 24 hours a day we all have. For me, I look at it to see how productive and accessible can I be during those 24 hours, and I look at it as activity. Some of the activities I get paid for, some I don't. So I don't believe in work. In fact, I believe a litmus test in life, if you're someone that rushes to the place where you work and you also rush home, you're living a really good life. And that's, like today, I was rushing to get to the office, but I'm also going to be in a really big hurry after I speak tonight to get home. And my life is complete that way. Linear time, people can't control. But even worse is multidimensional time that exists in your perspective. And that's where your analogy with the sun setting is that how do we control different perspectives of time when they're only exclusively ours? And so we have to really generate through gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication, the control of our perspective by, you know, I'll give you a simple life lesson right now. I tell people all the time, anytime you say, I got to do something, cancel it. Say, I get to do it.
If you simply just say, I got to give him credit for this. He says this too. He's so happy that you just said that because he
yes,
says,
I got to win.
Say your facts analogy.
No, I believe if you're like, my biggest thing now that I work towards is just freedom. I don't want to say financial freedom. It's not, it has nothing to do with money. It's just freedom. Being able to say yes and no to things that serve me and the people around me when I want to, how I want to, right? Like that's,
I believe in options.
Yeah. Is options. That the same thing? Yeah. Options. Like I, if there's ever a situation where I'm like, I have to do something or somebody
needs. Say your facts analogy. It's so good.
Oh, well, no, it's not a facts analogy. My dad had a, this is actually more of a patience thing, and we're going on a tangent now. My dad had a really successful business partner a long time ago, back in the day of fax. And he says that when he used to get faxes, when they'd come through, he would take the, whatever most recent one was, you take it and put it at the very bottom of the pile. And he would wait till all the other ones got sorted until this one came back to the top. And he said most of the time it either sorted itself or became unimportant or went away, right? And he says people, they get in these situations where it's like, I have to do this. I need to do this. It's, you're basing all your time on other people's schedules.
And what does your dad tell you about being married when you absolutely...
Well, now we're going on 50 tangents.
No, you got to say this one. You got to say this one.
Well, this, everyone's heard this. When you absolutely, positively have to say something, don't.
That's marriage advice.
But I don't know why. I don't know why you went on all those crazy tangents.
That's the need to be right, though.
But yes,
I like your dad even more. We're hooking up in San Diego. But that's awesome.
So I want to talk a little bit more about time. Sorry to interrupt.
Mike's like, tangents and then coming up.
Yeah, tangents and then coming up. Time management. I have a huge problem with that. I've tried time batching. I have what's the Pomito method?
I got the secret for you.
What's the secret? My calendar is like all color coded.
Now, the secret is in consistency of being a student of your calendar. Now, listen to me. Don't look at your calendar. You have to put an amount of time every day. Get in the habit of being a student of your calendar. What does that mean? I look at everything that's scheduled during the day and study it. I think to myself, how in person, on the phone, via email or media, am I going to attract or help others, right? So I have two questions. How can I be of service, or who is it that can help me? But I look at that and I look at it with the lens of productivity and accessibility, meaning how productive can I be during this 15-minute phone call? So one of the smartest things I ever did was brand myself the 520 rule. Now, when you guys start following me, you'll learn about the 520 rule. My objective of every phone call is to get off it in 5 minutes, to get it done in 5 minutes. Every meeting that I have, my objective. And so what happens is you brand yourself. People are literally on the phone talking to me with clocks going, I know I got a minute left. People come into my office, they're prepared. Believe it or not, 20 minutes is a long time for a meeting. And yet people will take 2 hours during the day when I can have 6 meetings, but branding myself, but that's part of being productive. Accessibility is different. Accessibility is one, how accessible during that time am I to others? And most importantly, how am I accessing what I want? Right? We're so allowing, right? How am I access? Everything exists already. So how efficient am I in accessing what I want out of this meeting? But even more importantly than being productive and accessible in the time slots that you have with your color-coded program, the most important thing to study is the blank spots. How productive and accessible am I going to be in the time that I don't have something to do? That's where I kill everybody. I have in multiply by efficiencies, effectiveness, and statistical success. I'm 64 hours productive during a day because of the time usage and the student of my calendar and looking at things with the lens of productivity and accessibility. I do things now. Like people freak out. We were talking about Instagram, call my cell phone. Literally, people will say, hey, can we schedule a call? that's a complete waste of time, in my opinion. If I have the time now, I'm like, here's my cell. Call me now. And then I'm on the clock. When they call me, I can handle it in 1 minute. So instead of, hey, talk to June, have her call me, discuss, and create all this mess for myself, I've been a do-it-now person. And if I can't do it now, it goes into a folder. Literally, I'll email myself or take the email, put it into a do-it-now folder. I prioritize those at the end of the day. Like you said, your fax files. Yep. And now I'm doing now what I can do and get through that. These guys will tell you, I know that they travel with me all over the world. I get more done in a day than most people will in a month.
Okay, but let me ask you this. So say you have a day, it's a Monday. You wake up, you do your meditation, you're up at 4, and you have your whole schedule cleared out, and you have blank spaces throughout, obviously.
Yeah.
Are you having a holder in there that says what you're going to do during the blank spaces, or are you just reactive to what's happening in those blank spaces?
Both. So what I've done within that blank space, I may say, okay, here's this slot. I'm going to call my wife, right? So, right, I might call my mother, and I literally, then I'll go to my Do It Now folder and move things over of what I want to achieve. Yesterday, for example, I had a blank space. I said, okay, prepare for CES, which is in January, January 8th and 9th, which meant get my hotel rooms, get my flights, have a conversation with my PR agent about what are the list of people that we're going to do. I have all my days of objectives. Like today, if I'm traveling, I have meetups. I have what's called holding court. So I don't usually take, and you guys live in LA, you can't take 5 meetings here in a day.
No, it's too,
I'll do 10 meetings. When I leave here, before I go speak, I'll do 10 meetings. It's called holding court. So what I do is I hit up all the guys I know in LA and say, hey, I'm going to be in Santa Monica between 4 and 5 o'clock before I speak. If you want to meet me, come on by.
Well, are you at coffee?
It could be anywhere, lobby of a hotel. It could be a Starbucks. And what happens is I'll take meetings and use my 520 rule, but also all the people that come, they start meeting each other and doing business.
That's really fucking smart.
And
that is great advice.
And so I'll invite 100 people I know in LA today, and 10 will show up smart. For an hour.
That's really smart. And the then you're 90, also networking
other
quickly.
90 love me because I've invited them to meet with me, and there's something else that comes up, and they're like, Dave, I want you to meet this guy. Or I am on the defensive in my life because I literally ask and attract in person, on the phone, via email, and social media. I do things now. I'm a student in my calendar with a lens of productivity and accessibility. And the only thing that gets in my way and your way is consistency, right?
I okay, literally so try to be consistent. When did you learn all this? How long did it take you to learn all
50
this?
50 years.
50 years. Okay, so I
kind of... Good more to go.
I want to go back to after you declared bankruptcy. How did you build yourself back up to what you are now?
So that's awesome. So I knew I've always been able to track money. Like, who the hell is a millionaire 9 months out of law school? Right? I bought my mom a house and a car and paid off my law loans. For whatever reason, I have an unconscious competency to attract wealth. I don't know what it is, but what I didn't know is how to maintain it. So what I did when I lost everything is, okay, what am I going to change so that when I make this money, because when I first started making money, I had law loans. I didn't know anyone, never had a real job, and somehow I was able to do this. Why would I think now that I have hundreds of people that love me? I've made money before. I paid the dummy tax that I wasn't going to make money again. How was I going to keep it? Right? So I studied, Red Think and Grow Rich Again. I studied Rockefeller and Vanderbilt.
You became a student.
Yeah. I asked for help. Literally, the difference in my life is that all I do is ask people how I can be of service. Like, when you're talking to me when I first met you, all I'm thinking of is, how can I be of service to this cool couple? Like, can I invite them to New Orleans with me? Who can I introduce to help their
I'm
podcast?
I'm down. I'm in New Orleans.
That's the unlock, though, because anything
what
that's...
What did Allison Broad say?
She said a lot of things, but
yeah, she said the thing about how you can become successful.
It's basically
asking people what they need.
Yeah. Yes, and when I think back on anything that's worked out for me, it's always been trying to provide value to someone else first, right? Like any partnership, any business, like it's always been like, how do I service somebody else? And the things that haven't worked are the things that I'm trying to serve myself.
No doubt. And then the second, it's all radical humility, because number one, being of service is radically humble. But even moreover, being able to be humble enough to say, do you know anyone? This is a great line. Do you know anyone that can help me? Right? It's self-inclusive of you too. So if I said, hey, I have a podcast and I'm looking to figure out the best way to market it because right now I don't know how, Michael, do you know anyone that can help me? And you say, oh, I own Dear Media. Yeah. We could package you in LinkedIn, Dave, and do really, I would love for you to help me. How can I be of service to you? Oh, I knew, right? And that's how these conversations in my life
go. But it's funny because that's the concept behind that is like, right, like help people that are podcasting using this medium, help them. Like that's really, that's it. Like
it's awesome. And I need it.
If we're helping them, then they're happy and then we're doing well,
I always say that Oprah is one of the greatest influencers of our time because she not only brought herself up, she brought other people up. Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, like she utilized her platform to bring other people up with her. And that's why I think she has such staying power. And it's even, it takes it more than even being collaborative. It actually, you're helping other people come up and then helping other people help other people.
Right. Empowering others to empower others. And Oprah, you know, my friend Brian Smith founded Ugg Boots. And he'll tell you he had a complete failure business until Oprah put it as a top 10 Christmas gift.
Wow.
Changed his whole business, ended up selling it for $40 million to Skechers, you know, changed his entire life. So it's an energy that she carries. And the number one energy that she carries is one that I work on every day is she's one of the first women, African-American women that came out and she was just radically humble. I'm overweight, right? I'm human. I was abused as a child. You know, a lot of these things that people do that make an impact. And all of a sudden people are like, wow, she's honest. She's here to help me, right? And bringing Dr. Phil on to talk about all these other issues, right? And elevate others to elevate yourself. Create an energy of radical humility. You know, that if people ask me all the time when I get on their pod, what would the best piece of advice you would give yourself when you were 18 or 21? It's simple. Radical humility. Ask for help. I can't do everything. I'm good at what I'm good at. You guys are great at what you're great at. And why not combine or collaborate together?
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.